Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Joined now by Mr. David Coleman. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Ryan.
And your weekend on a scale of 1 to 10 was?
Oh, a good 8, 9.
Really? That good?
Yeah. Ah, yeah.
You got the sunshine? Nice, were you out on the water? Or?
I was.
I thought you might have been.
I was.
Yeah.
I was out sailing Saturday morning.
You got the wind.
Rugby Saturday afternoon. Yeah, yeah, it was lovely. Really nice.
And
friends
today,
over yesterday.
And friends over yesterday for, what was it, bridge?
Just social, no.
Swingers? Was
dinner.
Was, dinner. Okay, good.
Food.
Did you have...
bridge.
Did you... did you... So you obviously have no meetings today. That's why you look like a convict.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just as I was trying to explain to you, which obviously you chose then to bring up. Yeah, any day I don't have to shave is a good day.
Today was that day.
So was yesterday and the day before.
But that's nice that you don't have to shave all the time.
Yeah.
You can just have one of those days where just, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like.
Just get other stuff done.
I mean, clearly looking at you today, you don't care a damn what you look like. That's how comfortable you are in your skin.
Because it's radio.
It's radio. And that's why we can all do what the hell we want and wear what we want. And
that's right.
You enjoyed the rugby anyway. That was good fun on Saturday.
Fantastic.
The second game was nearly more enjoyable than the first game, wasn't it?
Oh, it was very stressful.
The English game.
Very, very stressful.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, we had friends over for
to
it as
the
well.
Wire.
It was just, it was almost too much. Yeah, yeah.
But
you know, the heart's recovered.
And to see the lads then coming back, having, you know,
yeah, it
gone
was
for
great.
Their dinner or whatever it was, you know.
And to have all those fans like still in the stadium, that was cool.
Yeah, it was exciting.
Yeah, no, it was a great day.
Okay, now we have lots to talk about.
We should do the work then.
Yeah, let's do it. David, more importantly, I have three beautiful kids all in school, one in senior class, then first and second class, I presume. The two that are in senior and second class are no problem and are very bright. The one that's in first class is finding it hard. Nothing seems to be sinking in, reading, writing, maths, everything goes over his head. If I keep him back, then he'll be in class with his baby sister. He is already being badly bullied. I'm getting nowhere with the school. Your last hope.
Well, funny now, sorry, because I was just about to say, well, why aren't you in chatting to the school? Because what I'd suggest is that you get a comprehensive assessment done as your first port of call, because, I mean, chances are he either has a general learning difficulty, he has something like dyslexia or dyspraxia. I mean, there are many different things that can occur for children that just make it hard for them to pick up what's going on academically in school. But the rules in terms of the Department of Education and Skills, the rules on retention, you know, keeping a child back, are really quite strict now, and so the school would have to be really clear upon the basis upon which they would actually keep your child back. So it's not a decision that's taken lightly. I think, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was often we'll keep him back and that'll do him power good and he'll be much better. And so that was the manner in which that decision used to
so
get made.
It's not encouraged now, is it?
Yeah, it's not even that it's not encouraged, but you just have to be really clear. What are the learning objectives for a child and why aren't they being met in their current class and how will they be better met if they stay back and repeat that year? Because I think, you know, just that recognition, you know, with a lot of children coming in, say age 5 anyway, they'd be that bit older if they stay back, and socially, you know, is it a good thing or a bad thing for them to stay back? So there are many issues just from the school's point of view, never mind that social thing about being with the little sister.
Yes.
But that is a consideration, because if he's already struggling and then to have his little sister shining like a little bright light in the same class as him could also be quite a knock to his self-esteem and his sense of well-being. But ultimately, I suppose the key thing is for him that he actually feels he's at a level where he can perform, where he actually feels he can achieve, where he feels he can learn stuff.
Okay.
So I would definitely be going back into the school, making sure that they're prioritising him for assessment, and then making sure that he's getting all the right kind of support, and that if he is going to potentially be kept back, that they're really clear about how that's going to help him academically.
Excellent work. Here's one says, I'm a worried parent of a 6-year-old girl who finds it hard to interact with children her own age. She prefers adults or older children. She has speech and language impairments, but we don't think that this is the reason for not playing with peers. She is very anxious at times, hates spontaneity, and prefers to know what's happening in advance. I'm worried that she will have no friends at school. She has 2 younger brothers and is good with them.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't necessarily downplay the speech and language as a potential issue, because, you know, being spontaneous and feeling able and equipped to deal with the world and to be able to respond to the whole kind of verbal interaction and banter that will be there, even among 6-year-olds, you know, does take quite a lot of skill. And so if perhaps when she's with adults, she gets, you know, a bit more understanding, a little bit more leeway perhaps from the adults who aren't as quick to point out if she's not not keeping up with the conversation or whatever it might be, then it could well be that she actually struggles with that bit. So if you haven't already, I presume when you know, a parent is talking about their child having speech and language difficulties, that they've gone and had that assessed, and also that they're in touch now with the speech and language therapist in terms of a program to try and help that. But if not, then that's certainly a way forward. But the other thing then with young children that age, as a way to help them in terms of that social interaction, is just to try and do one-on-one play days with a peer, with a friend, and be part of that, because it's still okay as a parent to be in and around the place while your six-year-old is playing with another six-year-old, so that you know, they might be in the kitchen, and then you can help with that interaction. So you can, you know, actually intervene if needs be. If you feel that your daughter's being kind of left out of a conversation, you can help a conversation flow, you can help the play flow, and so there's various different ways as a parent that you can just make that easier, such that your daughter then feels more comfortable with this same age peer, and equally the peer thinks, oh yeah, you know, this girl is nice and friendly, and I like to spend time with her. And so that might be the way then to increase that confidence in the social interaction as well.
Okay, let's take another one from 51552. Text says, no, actually, we'll take a call from Saoirse. Hi, Saoirse.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. David Coleman here, he's all yours.
Thank you. Sorry, now I'm a little bit nervous.
Don't be nervous at all.
I wasn't expecting a phone call back.
No, but this is the beauty of radio. You talk to me, I talk to you, and we talk to them, and everyone goes home happy.
Okay.
Okay, you're doing great so far.
My situation is, I have a son with long QT.
What's that
now? It's one of the conditions, say, that you'd associate with SADS.
So seasonal adjustment.
Seasonal affective disorder.
Is that what it is? Everyone say, okay, go on.
Sudden adult death syndrome.
Sudden adult death. Excuse me, I thought it was just something else entirely.
No.
Okay, so it's much more serious than that. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, so he was diagnosed 3 years ago when he was 7. And he had to give up. Now, I suppose at the time he was only beginning to play sports, so...
yeah.
Well, not that it wasn't a big deal, but... I suppose it's very difficult, I suppose. Like I say to people, you worry as much about the emotional impact of having to give up lots of things that his peers are doing as much as his heart.
Yes. So it's whatever but, about the physical minding of the boy you love, you have to keep an eye on the emotional impact of having to be on the side of the pitch rather than running around with the boys who have their hearts intact and everything's fine. Lucky them. Yeah. Isn't that it?
Yeah, and like, you know, I suppose it's kind of quite a sensitive thing, because I suppose we were one of the lucky ones. Ciarán was diagnosed. He could have got to 15, never has been diagnosed, and just dropped dead on us. Yeah. You know, so like, and we're very conscious of that we are very lucky to have him. But it's very double-sided, because, you know, he gave up. You know, he can play no competitive sports. He can't swim. He can't go on the theme park on a fun rides or trampolines or bouncy castles or, you know, them kind of things. So it's a huge amount for, he's 10 now.
And so, what happened to him after Christmas this year?
Oh, this year, he was on medication, which we thought he was doing really well on, and he collapsed on us one night. I happened to be with him. We were at Scouts, and there was a little bit of snow, and we went out to throw a few snowballs, and he just dropped. So he was admitted to hospital straight away. Mm. So when medications, for some reason, just stopped working, they have to look at different things, you know, I suppose. They have to intervene then, because the medication has stopped working. So his first surgery was... see, his heart is perfect. It's actually his beef that is the problem. So, like, to look at his heart is fine. It's the beef that's wrong.
Okay.
So there's very little then you can kind of fix as such.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first surgery was called a symphysectomy, where they severed the nerves running through the heart that carry the adrenaline, in the hope that that will slow down the adrenaline when it hits the heart.
Okay, so that's the medical side, which is complicated and difficult, but you've described it very well. Yeah. So what would you say the question for David is then, if we were to break it down to the basics, Saoirse?
The question to David is then, how can we help him which I suppose it is torment to him in his little life that he can't do the things that his friends can do. Okay. How can we help that?
Let's see what David has to say on that.
Susha, hi, how are you doing?
Hi, David.
You know, the key thing is, I suppose, when it comes down to any child and their, you know, sense of identity and fitting in, you know, it is always going to be very important. And so the key thing is to find some kind of activities that he actually can feel like he fits in, where he feels like he's with friends who are also interested in the same thing. I mean, that's the natural thing that happens with so many sports. You know, you just, you go out, you kick a football out in the green with your friends, and you then join up, maybe you do some like karate, or you do some kind of martial art, or, you know, and so you find other groups of children that you have, I suppose, are like-minded in terms of the things that they're interested in. And even though he's now so restricted in terms of sport, I mean, there are probably other activities that is worth pursuing for him, where again he's going to have that social interaction, but unfortunately they're obviously going to have to be so much more sedentary, and I guess that's the key thing, and also that they don't even stress him in terms of competition. And but it really is, unfortunately, one of those things that he ultimately is going to have to accommodate to. And that's really for you and his dad about being just really supportive and empathetic and saying, yeah, we get it. It's really hard because nobody can fix it. You know, nobody can make it go away.
Yeah.
And so it is just one of those, you know, life illnesses like any other, you know, significant illness that you just have to adjust and accommodate and change your lifestyle and your life structure around, as opposed to hoping it's going to go away or hoping it's going to improve. So that's the long-term strategy for him, and the only way to do that really is to A, find stuff that he can be involved in that has that social aspect, so he actually feels he has friends that do the same things as he does, and then also for you just to empathize a lot and to acknowledge just how difficult this is for him, and that it's, you know, it's not going to be easy, but he has to just keep struggling on.
Yeah, and do you think, like, we have done that, like, he's in the scouts and we put him into the golf club here, but there's still that huge sense of loss for him, even still 3 years on.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to, you know, now he loves the scouts. The golf, he goes and he likes it. It's not what he wants to do, and that's the problem.
I know.
You know, and, you know, as he gets older, I suppose, will he just get better at coping with it?
Yeah, hopefully. But you see, it's like any other loss. I mean, you know, as you describe it there, you know, the loss, then it's like any other loss. Ultimately, you know, coping and dealing with loss comes to that point of adjustment and acceptance that this is the way things are, and that you actually have to make the best of the way things are, rather than just hanging on to what it is that you've lost and the missing of that. And it, you know, and it is just harder for him, I guess, because he witnesses his friends in there having the crack. And that just, you know, is poignant every single time. So I think it is, you know, I mean, why wouldn't he accommodate in due course? But like any other loss, it sounds like it's just going to take him the time, you know?
Yeah.
Well, Saoirse, we wish you well with all
Thanks
of that. And I hope maybe stay in touch with us and see how he's getting on. I hope he's doing really well.
He is doing great. God. He's a great kid.
Well, thanks.
Okay.
Well, for somebody who was nervous, I thought you did very, very well. So congratulations. Thanks for your time this morning.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
David, I'll move on because we don't have a whole heap of time. But, I have a 10-year-old daughter, says the text, suffering with anxiety. She's lost weight over the last 7 months, eats 3 meals every day. She controls what she eats, but would have a decent dinner and breakfast. She cannot tolerate very much in terms of being firm with her. Even the mildest form of hurry up for school upsets her. And we've seen a pediatrician and waiting to see a dietitian. We have attended a therapist who thinks neurotherapy might help. Have you any experience in this area? It can be very draining.
I have lots of experience dealing with children with anxieties. And I guess, you know, the key thing is that, you know, to describe your daughter that she can't cope with any kind of correction from a parent would suggest that there's something in terms of the dynamic that's going on between you and your daughter that is really worth exploring in terms of maybe even family therapy. Because, you know, anxiety is one thing, but that sounds like it's almost like her way of just trying to be in charge in the family. And that's not necessarily a healthy thing for a 10-year-old. And in fact, fact, you know, having too much power as a 10-year-old actually will increase her anxiety rather than decrease it. So so that's worth looking at, so that she actually realizes her place in the family and who is actually the boss, and that she can actually cope with correction, that she can cope, and so that she will learn some skills to help her both deal with the anxiety, but also to deal with, you know, that kind of, what would you say, the other people, because, you know, I mean, yeah. So definitely, I think, you know, I would suggest that you go for something like family therapy, or come and talk to someone like me, a psychologist, about both the anxiety, but also about just what's going on in the family, where she's in a position that she can, it seems, just based on that little information, control the situation, which isn't going to be healthy for her or for you in the long term.
Last one, David. I have a son who's just turned 17, has dyslexia. He did not want to go back to school after junior cert, so I managed to convince him to do transition year. He says he hates school, that he's not going to finish transition year. I feel like a bad parent and I'm getting totally stressed. He's a good child, excels at football and hurling, and I'm at my wit's end with him. I feel he's missing out on the social and academic life that school brings. Tough old gig, that one.
Yeah, except though, I suppose the bit that perhaps, again, for that mum or dad, is to realise that the academic end of school is what's really stressing him out, perhaps because of his dyslexia, perhaps because he's always felt on the back foot when it comes to the learning aspect of school. And that, you know, over the years may have led to, you know, just disagreements with various teachers or struggles with doing his homework. And so perhaps, you know, again, that's caused a bit of conflict. It may well be time to start talking to the career guidance teacher in the school and to look at other alternatives rather than that academic route. I mean, there are lots of other kind of social opportunities for young people, as well as educational opportunities that don't involve, you know, formal education in a school, because obviously you do want them to have opportunity down the line, you do want them to have a choice of career perhaps, but it's about looking now at what might actually suit him, what will he enjoy doing, and what will restore that sense of motivation that he seems to be lacking at the moment. Because at the moment it's sounds like, you know, he just doesn't want to do school, but what does he want to do? And so maybe it's about finding that and acknowledging that maybe actually, you know, mainstream school isn't the way forward for him, but what is the way forward? What will excite him? What will get him up out of bed in the morning and get him off out to either further training or career or apprenticeship or whatever it might be? Because, I mean, you know, there's people in all those situations for him to hang out with as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in terms of that kind of missing out on the social aspect of school, that's not the biggest deal, as long as he's doing something that he's actually happy with and something that offers him the potential in terms of opportunity and choice in life.
David, thank you so much as always for
pleasure.
That. And we got quite a lot in there today, which is great. And thanks indeed to everyone for sending in their texts and emails. And we'll do it all again in a couple of weeks' time. Safe travels back to
Killaloe. Well, of course, it'll be Easter Monday in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, we won't be here.
Then you'll be on holidays. I'll be working.
Are you going to be here on Easter Monday?
No, I'm coming in Easter on the Tuesday after Easter.
Yeah, but that's
Monday.
Not Easter Monday. So why would you give out to me for not being here on Easter Monday when you won't be here either?
No, I was making the point that in 2 weeks' time, we won't actually be doing this all over again.
No, we won't. But
because it'll be Easter Monday.
You're getting very pedantic there, aren't you? I mean, like, really, you said to me, we won't be here on Easter Monday because we're off. We're allowed to have a day off every now and again, as you know.
Yeah, but then you're off on the Tuesday after.
Well, I think that...
I, on the other hand, I'm in time
do
working.
Do you enjoy working until midnight on a Friday night, David? Do you enjoy doing that every Friday night, do you? Is that one of the perks? And what do you do for the rest of the afternoon?
The rest of the afternoon, I'm going to work in now.
No, you're not. You've got
meetings.
On shame. Thank you, David.